This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
You hear so much about artificial intelligence, and honestly, most of us don't know exactly what that means, but I know where they do, Paul. Carnegie Mellon University, one of the brain trust centers of the world. And joining us is the professor and department head of machine learning, Zico Coulter. Professor, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be here.
As a frame of reference, this is the world's first commercial radio station. So it's a big first that happened 105 years ago, and Pittsburgh continues to be an innovation center. This, explain for people, if you would, what is artificial intelligence?
Artificial intelligence is a pretty big bucket term. It's kind of an umbrella term, and it pretty much refers to kind of writing any computer program that performs tasks we associate with human intelligence, right? So this goes from, you know, basic problem solving to anywhere to sort of very advanced kind of things that the human would normally do. Now, the issue in some sense, some of the confusion of it is that while that's kind of the academic definition of AI, what people have most experienced as AI in recent years is largely through these chatbots, through large language models. And so while the term is very broad, I think people have seen and experienced one particularly powerful form of AI through chatbots like ChatGPT and others.
Right. That I think you're right about that. But if I get this right now, artificial intelligence has big applications for like self-driving cars, speech recognition, facial recognition software, thinking along these lines, right?
Exactly. I mean, these are tasks that typically, in the past at least, have required a human to do them, right? Humans are very good at speech recognition. They're very good at driving cars, things like this. And when people talk about artificial intelligence revolutionizing certain areas like this, what they really mean is that we're on the cusp of writing software that can do these things as well as a person can. So in future years, we might have systems that can drive cars as well as people, or recognize speech, transcribe speech, or translate speech as well as people. And I think, you know, as this field progresses, there's more and more tasks that we'll be able to do kind of on the same level as a lot of people in many cases.
We're with Professor Zico Coulter, Carnegie Mellon University. Boy, I have so many questions, Professor. Recently, and back just this past Sunday, CBS did a big story about their powering up Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania to serve the energy needs of this growing technology. Why does it take so much juice to fuel AI?
Right. So modern machine learning methods, which are sort of the workhorse for AI, this is a technique that we've developed over many years, but which has sort of come to prominence in recent years. These methods run primarily on graphics processing units, or GPUs. And they're on this sort of specialized hardware. Basically, it's carrying out the operations that are needed to run these large AI systems. The challenge, though, is that much like you would imagine a lot of brain power is needed for these for similar things if a human was doing them, you need a lot of electricity and just raw power in order to carry out these operations on a lot of hardware as well. And so basically, a lot of sort of computing hardware. And so basically, the bottom line is, in order to carry out some of these most sort of cutting-edge models, we really need very, very powerful processors, and especially to sort of serve them and distribute them on as wide a level as is currently being envisioned, we need to rapidly scale up the power capacity and the energy capacity of our infrastructure in order to provide the needs for running all these models.
Professor, switching from the technology and the infrastructure of AI, can you address the issue of ethics as it applies to development?
Absolutely. So these models fundamentally are powerful and very general purpose. And when you have a very powerful general purpose model, you need to understand how can we deploy these models in a safe and responsible way. And we at Carnegie Mellon, but also we sort of around the academic community around the world, think very heavily about sort of what is the right way to deploy these models. How do we grapple with the ethical implications, both in sort of the immediate sense of, you know, what are the biases in these models? Where might they make mistakes? Things like this. But also in the broader sense of, as we develop more and more powerful models, when do these things become safety risks? What are the risks associated with them? And with, you know, very powerful, generally intelligent systems. And essentially, how can we develop these things in a way to ensure that they benefit, that we are able to achieve the benefits of these tools, using them in very effective manners, but avoid a lot of the risks that might come with this.
And finally, how did Carnegie Mellon University become the giant center of robotics and artificial intelligence now?
Right. Well, you mentioned actually how KDKA was the first radio station one of the first commercial radio stations in the U.S. Well, Carnegie Mellon actually also had one of the first, for example, undergraduate AI majors in the entire U.S. I think actually the first undergrad AI major in the U.S. as well. So we've for a very long time been an innovation in the space of AI. Going back all the way to the inception of the field with Alan Newell and Herbert Simon, we have been kind of at the forefront of technology for a long time. But I think that this really sort of picked up, or rather it sort of has continued throughout the whole history of Carnegie Mellon. So in the 80s, as you mentioned, with the founding of the Robotics Institute, in the 90s with the founding of what's now the Machine Learning Department, we have really been at the cutting edge of setting up entire departments within our university focused solely on topics in AI. And this has enabled us to grow very quickly and expand to the scope and the scale that's needed to really influence the field and drastically impact sort of how we develop AI. I think a lot of the innovations you see in AI these days, though of course a lot of them in their current form are produced by large companies, a lot of them have their roots in research done right here at Carnegie Mellon, and sort of the influence of our university is really felt throughout the modern field.
That is a wonderful, detailed explanation and much appreciated. Zico, thank you and continue the great work.
Great. Thanks so much.
Professor Zico Coulter, who is the department head of machine learning.
Another first for Pittsburgh, Larry. That's awesome.
That they came up with the term,
yeah,
artificial intelligence. And, you know, at CMU, they come up with the emoticon, the smile.
The emojis, remember? Yep.
Yeah, that's another. One correction, though. He said KDK was the first station in the country. No, in the world.
Okay.
First commercial radio station on the planet, Professor. From P.J. Fitzpatrick, Home Improvement Traffic Center. Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh, Demand the Yellow Van, Butler Transit Authority, and McVeigh Plumbing and Heating. So, Paul, I think we anticipated some changes with the Federal Education Department. And yesterday, the announcement, Linda McMahon, who now heads that, was basically told by the president to eliminate your own job. Do such a great job that you have no job, which is interesting. But the first set of cuts were made, over 1,300. I guess they're excluding if you get grants for education and some other funding.
With Pell grants, for example.
Yeah.
These are congressionally mandated.
Well, that's one of the big concerns for a lot of people that have kids in college who count on some federal funding to be able to even afford. And usually what happens, for those that don't know, is so a university gives you a number, right? And it can vary greatly. CCAC is the most inexpensive and a very attractive option. But a lot of people would like to go to a bigger name school, even if it's like a state school or University of Pittsburgh, Penn State, Duquesne, you know, CMU, all of those are much higher priced, CMU being at the top of that list. So then they look at your financial history for the family, and you fill out a form called a FAFSA, and that gives all of those involved in putting that pie together for what kind of opportunities financially you may get. You may qualify for some grants, some federally backed loans, state loans, grants, and all this. They put a whole structure together.
You know, considering the cost of a secondary education, every little bit helps, right?
It does, and especially if people have more than one child. And I was thinking Rich Fitzgerald, who was with us last hour, has 8 kids. They all went to Penn State, Maine. You know, that collectively, that had to be an unbelievable amount of money to do that. But people in this case who were hoping and already with the Pell Grant program or other programs directed on financial aid can breathe for a minute.
Yeah, it's not under attack. It's not being targeted. One of the things that I found interesting about one of the stories I was reading about the change that they announced 1,300 layoffs in the education department yesterday. And it's about going to wind up being close to half when you take the people who took buyouts and the termination of probationary employees. But it is still one of the smallest of the federal departments. And what they're thinking about is shifting some of the education department tasks over to other government agencies. For example, major responsibilities like civil rights enforcement, that would go to the Justice Department. Student loans to the Treasury or Commerce Departments, oversight of student disability rights to Health and Human Services, and so on.
So this is, because a lot of people, and this is just one, and it's the smallest of all of the federal departments in terms of cutting jobs and dismantling. We heard the IRS, 7,000 jobs, and most of those in the $10 million plus auditing portion of the IRS. So I'm talking about companies who make $10 million.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
$1 million or greater.
From what I understand about the numbers on the IRS, Larry, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but in recent years, hiring at the IRS, as you know, increased sharply. And so they're pulling back on the overall number, but the number they're going to wind up with, very much like what we heard at Veterans Affairs, is going to be somewhere at staffing levels maybe 4 or 5, 6 years ago.
And the reason they wanted to do that in terms of hiring more people was to presumably mine more money from taxpayers.
Right. The hiring of 86,000 additional IRS employees was aimed at, you know, enhancing the amount of revenue that the country gets from taxation that, for whatever reason, doesn't get collected.
And some of the other issues, the bigger issue this week is trying to get this deal done so we can extend the government's ability to spend it all.
Well, the House passed it, and it was by like a 4-vote margin. Now it's going to the Senate, where I think they have to have
60
votes. So it's unclear what's going to happen right now.
Well, we'll keep you posted. All of this can affect your wallet, and longer term, the idea is to cut government spending, get more jobs here, create more wealth. But in the meantime, it's a big pinch, and we've certainly seen that on Wall Street.
And a quick question I'd like to get an answer to at some point. Let's say that the Education Department does disappear. How many more jobs will that create in the state of Pennsylvania to handle education?
Ah, and Governor Shapiro has hired some of the displaced federal workers to fill unfilled jobs at the state level. Interesting. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard, and every other Wednesday, we check in with the president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, Carlos T. Carter. Carlos, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good. A couple of weeks ago, I saw you at a Pens game with an organization and a group. We actually saw a win, and they did it again last night. That was fun. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes, I did enjoy the other one. I wasn't part of this last game, but glad to see, you know, our team get some wins. I know we were at the bottom of our section, so I want to see us rise.
Yeah, we still are. Meanwhile, very important anniversary this past weekend, the 60th. Of Bloody Sunday, documented in the movie Selma, which I just recently rewatched, a very powerful story. For those that don't know, explain what the day Bloody Sunday was all about.
Well, just to give a little context, so, you know, in the South, you know, for years, black people couldn't vote at all until the passage of the Civil Rights Act, the Voter Rights Act of 1965. So Bloody Sunday commemorates when, you know, folks were marching across, well, before they even get across the Edmund Pettus Bridge to really fight for the right to vote. They were viciously beaten, I think, by, you know, state troopers and other civilians, and literally they were praying to march. But it's important because that event, you know, I think really woke the consciences of America and even white America. You know, people seeing people being beaten like animals, worse than animals, gave, I think, Lyndon Johnson the wind and the courage to get that bill passed in Congress that allowed people like myself to vote. And for me, it's even more important because my family's from Selma, Alabama. So my aunt, who's alive today, marched in a lot of marches. My grandparents couldn't vote. So for me, going there was a homecoming. I'd never been here, but that's where my dad and that's where they grew up. But they left because of the brutalities of there and the discrimination, and they couldn't take it anymore, and that's why they came north.
It sounds to me like that was an inspiration for you to do the work you do today.
Absolutely, because you think that the impetus of the Urban League is a great migration, right? Urban League started by a rich white woman named Ruth Sandwich Baldwin, and a black man who was the first graduate of Columbia University to get a PhD, really to help people, a million blacks from, you know, the early 1900s to the 70s that moved from south to north with the Industrial Revolution going on. They needed jobs, they needed training, they needed housing, they needed to fight discrimination. That's why the Urban League actually exists, because of things like this. So absolutely, I think the family thing and the work that we do, and there were like 200 people from the National Urban League there. There were like maybe 60 CEOs. There were, you know, people like Al Sharpton when they was there, Aunt Maxine, as they call her, Rep Maxine, and Jesse Jackson, and others like that. But it was a powerful movement, as people, over 600,000 people, I believe, were there. So I've never been in such a big march. And actually, they asked me to sing during the march. So people asked me to step up front. And so I was helping to lead some singing, actually, as we come across. But a powerful moment in history. But I think it also underscores today, right? There are still, there's legislation today that look to suppress voting rights, you know, with these, you know, based on conspiracy theories around, you know, identification and fraud that really is non-existent. And so it's important that we, that's just not in the past, right? It's not so long ago that today we be vigilant and realize our vote is our power, right? And so that we don't suppress that. And that people actually don't waste the power to vote, because so much blood has been spilled of our ancestors to vote. So when people are sitting back and letting the couch vote, they are not participating in our democracy. And they're wasting the blood, again, of our courageous ancestors who literally were died, who died, you know, blacks and whites and all people have died for this right for us. So it's very serious. Freedom ain't free.
And for the young people, how challenging is it to get that message across, and well, what a privilege it is to vote?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes when you have something, and just like, you know, the technology people take for granted, the people who didn't have it don't do that. But I think it's important that we, as the older folks, like, kind of educate them, because a lot of people don't know about Bloody Sunday. I've been educating people. They never heard of it. And I think it lets people realize how serious it is, that it wasn't so, so long ago, right? And just, I think educating and connecting, not preaching to, but connecting and sharing stories. Stories are powerful. People remember things in stories. So sharing these stories in a way that are engaging and to compel people to action.
We're with Carlos T. Carter. Before you go, Carlos, you have a big event, an annual event coming up.
Yes, yes. On March 21st, it's our Ronald H. Brown Leadership Gala. It's a great event. Usually we have like 400-plus people. It's a party with a purpose. I mean, it's a great event, but it also supports the mission of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh. We're recognizing people like Charlie and Latasha Batch, former Stiller, and his awesome wife. We're recognizing Dan Honorado, former county executive, now executive Highmark. Remember my Lions, Latrinda Sherrill, and Dante Green from the Trade Institute of Pittsburgh. But a great event. You don't want to miss it. And again, it supports our mission, really, where I say we remove barriers and empower people, you know, to thrive. And, you know, it's about economic empowerment. And so please be part of our mission. So if you want more information, you can go to ulpghgala.org. Again, ulpghgala.org, or just go to our website, ulpghgala.org, and look at the banner. But ulpghgala.org. I want to see you there. And if you want to sponsor, it's not too late. So get your tickets today. Thank you, Larry.
Carlos T. Carter, thank you. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Bye.
A lot of us thought maybe you'll wake up this morning and hear the Steelers have signed Aaron Rodgers. That didn't happen, Paul, as you know. Or Russell Wilson. They've made no other quarterback announcements as of yet. So I went next door earlier this morning to talk to Adam Crawley and Duren Dickerson. It seems like that's all they talk about, right?
To be sure.
Doesn't matter what right. else is going on. So I asked Adam first, is it going to be Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, or some mystery QB?
I think it's leaning Rodgers, but I think Rodgers ultimately is the decision maker here. And I think it's going to keep dragging out. Now, you're going to, you know, play this, and then it's going to be Russell Wilson. But I think Rodgers is an egomaniacal maniac. And I think he gets off, if you will, on being able to keep two teams sort of in purgatory right now, the Steelers and the Giants. And the entire league's talking about him. And, you know, Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk says he might want $45 million a season. I mean, maybe with the state of Social Security and our 401ks, Marty, you're old, you got to get paid. But, like, who's he think he is? He ain't what he used to be. $45 million, I don't think they'll go that far, but they would have Russell Wilson now, I think, if they wanted Russell Wilson now.
But if Aaron Rodgers come, are there ayahuasca places that he could go to around here?
Doran has a sauna. The Steelers don't. The Steelers, maybe they have to add an ayahuasca room. I don't know. I don't know that Pittsburgh's necessarily the fit for Aaron Rodgers. I don't think New York was either. His best bet, I mean, honestly, he should probably retire, but that's easy for me to say. He wants to keep making money, keep his career going.
Is it ayahuasca? I think I said ayahuasca.
No, I think, what is it? I think you nailed that. I don't know. Why do you keep looking at me like I know? I don't know.
Because you went to WVU, you probably utilized it.
There was no ayahuasca. There was marijuana.
All right, let's ask Pitt Hall American and NFL alum, part of the morning show, Doran Dickerson. Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, like Crowley said, it seems like it's leaning towards that way, but I think they're going to go with the familiar guy, which is Russell Wilson, because Aaron Rodgers is going to drag his feet. He's going to, you know, play the game that Crowley just said, and he loves this attention between, you know, with the ESPNs of the world and Fox Sports of the world and the two teams fighting over his services. He loves that stuff. So I think it's going to get dragged out to a point where Russell Wilson's going to be there. He's going to be like, look, you know, I'm the familiar option. You had me last year. I want to be back. I think that we can make this happen. And honestly, at the end of the day, wouldn't hate it. I mean, I guess we don't have a choice because there's only really two quarterbacks on the table, but I wouldn't hate it. I think that with DK Metcalf and George Pickens, that Russell Wilson can revive something this year.
But wait, gentlemen, isn't there a third option? Big Ben coming back? He seems all juiced.
You know what? Honestly, if we did a poll this morning, I think that the poll would be probably 90%. If you put all three quarterbacks, 90% of people would want Ben back. That's how delusional some people are right now. But, you know, it would be kind of cool to see Big Ben throw to DK Metcalf. I ain't going to lie.
Have you ever been in one of those wigwams like Aaron Rodgers?
I've been in a tent before. You guys are talking about ayahuasca. If there's any ayahuasca places in Pittsburgh, I would just say drink out of the Monwit River and probably can hallucinate. You probably can do the same deed or same deal that ayahuasca could do to you if you're Aaron Rodgers.
Adam Crowley, Dora Dickerson, here we go, gentlemen.
Let's go. Let's get it going.
So there you have it.
Couple of notes on Aaron Rodgers. First is that today's the day that the Jets will make him a free agent. So he would be eligible to sign a contract if there is one that he's agreed to. And I happen to agree with both of them that he's playing a number of teams against one another. Perhaps even Minnesota might be another one.
Right.
And Antonio Brown posted on X yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Antonio Brown said it's a done deal. And Aaron Rodgers will be with the Steelers. So
wow. well, there's a source.
Well, there you go. He considers himself the most reliable.
Is that right?
Authority of sports information right now on the internet. So
when is he coming back?